Could the free market approach be the answer to reducing our carbon emissions? Ian Swingland, founder of the Durrell Institute, believes it could.
All of conservation relies on tenure. Who owns what? Now, one of the biggest problems in conservation is that the government says, we own everything. And so, rather like Moscow hotels 25 years ago, when the state owned everything, nobody took care of anything because, well, they didn't own it. As soon as you have private ownership or distinct ownership, i.e. we know who owns it, they'll take care of it because it's in their own self-interest. So if you take that all the way through, the important thing is that people have to have a sense of ownership, either because they privately own something or because they're in a group that together owns something. But where, if you like, the state owns something and nobody is an individual believes they own it, then the state has to take care of it. So when we have national parks or other sites of outstanding natural beauty or whatever, governments have to take care of it and they have to police it and they have to make sure it's okay. And the best example within, if you like, virtually the private sector is the National Trust, which, if you like, you can imagine there's a lot of shareholders who are members of the National Trust who have the capacity as, in effect, a private organisation to actually look after something that is communally owned. And I think that's the critical thing. But in most parts of the world, indigenous tribes, for example, very infrequently have the rights, legal rights, of where they've lived for thousands of years, and it's often that governments shift them on. And I mean, the latest example, of course, is the Kalahari Bushmen in Botswana, where you've got the problem that they were removed from the deserts, it is believed, because there are diamonds where they have traditionally lived for 20,000 years, and they're in the way. Now, this is, in a sense, morally wrong. The question will always come down to, okay, who owns it, therefore who's responsible, and can they take care of it?
If that's the case, though, who does decide whether, for example, these bushmen get to have that piece of land or somebody else gets it?
Well, in that particular instance, it's the government of Botswana that have decided what's going to happen. But I think in general, where something's privately owned, the ownership's clear. When something is communally owned, you tread a fine line between the tragedy of the commons, when no one takes care of anything because, well, it's owned in common by a lot of ill-defined people, i.e. we're not quite sure how many people are in that group or not, and essentially a defined group taking great responsibility for something, and they will make the decisions. Then you have the national and supranational rules. For example, Parliament could decide that there are going to be certain rules about land and the way land is used and the way the environment is treated, and that's fine too. And then we've got the supranational laws and regulations, which could be the EU making a decision in Brussels, or it could, I'm afraid, be a multinational corporation who could make a decision. I mean, let's remember, if you take the top 100 multinational corporations in the world, they represent more money and more power than 2/3 of the countries in the world put together. And when you start knowing these sorts of what I would call killer facts, I think many might call them, it is really quite frightening when you realise that, frankly, there are more powerful and influential companies that are rich than there are countries. You begin to see that sometimes people get lost in the system. So it's very important that we engage industry and the free market and governments and people and their constituencies, whether they be an individual owner or a community or whatever it might be, tribe even, and give them all a shareholding in what's going on so that a system can be worked out that will work into the future. And it provides for incentive, wealth creation, a decent environment that's clean, and everyone knows that each other can't cheat, otherwise they'll lose out. Because if you don't have that in it, it won't work. It's not stable, therefore it's not sustainable.
And how feasible do you think it really is that this will actually be self-policing?
Most people are pretty good at defending what's theirs. If you get a group of people who are defending something that's a threat to them all in their different ways privately, then you actually have got a force to be reckoned with. One of the principal mechanisms by which self-policing will happen is economic power. The wealthier people become, the better off they become, the more power they're going to have. Two principal levers of power. One is politics and connections and networks and who you know and who likes you and who doesn't like you. That sort of politics, that sort of power. And the other major kind of power is money. If you've got a lot of money, my goodness, the things that you can make happen are limitless, frankly. So if we can make people, whether you happen to live in a tropical rainforest or whatever, increasingly wealthier because they have some part, some stake, some shareholding in the environment around them, and they get income as a result of it by their labours or whatever, and they become better off, then they're going to have more authority over what goes on around them. But if you're poor and you have nothing and you don't even have rights to the land that you've lived on for generations, then you, I'm afraid, are very vulnerable to the exigencies of government and ministers and big businessmen and so on. So those are the two forms of power, it seems to me. My intention would be to try and ensure that the environment and the services it has enriches people in all senses so that they actually have increasing authority over what goes on land that they're reliant on.
That's Ian Swingland, founder of the Durrell Institute.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.